It's time for the MMA Insiders, brought to you by Battle Born Injury Lawyers. Now, here's Adam Hill and Brett Okamoto with this week's Inside Scoop on Mixed Martial Arts.
It is Adam Hill and Brett Okamoto here, MMA Insiders. On a Thursday evening, we are back. Next week, down in Anaheim, we'll try to see what we can come up with. But it's a big fight card that we'll get into in just a couple of minutes. UFC 214, we have been waiting a long time for this for sure. But a couple other things to get into as well. First of all, Brett, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Good.
I made it in here. I'm alive.
There you go. That's all that really matters. Did you get to watch OJ today?
No, I've been following on everybody's updates, obviously. But no, I didn't watch it myself.
I saw some people say OJ might go into like a seniors MMA league.
All right.
That would be a good thing for him to get some aggression out. Like, I don't think that's going to happen.
You know, MMA is probably a sport that would welcome him. You know, it is.
They would take OJ. There's a freak show element to things sometimes. Well, as we said, UFC 214, Conor and Floyd, that tour wrapped up, so we can get a little recap of what went on there and a couple other things. But I first wanted to get into something that became official in the last couple of hours. We already knew this was going to happen. Not surprising. But just, it's one of those things, like, even when you know something's going to happen, you're like, all right, until somebody officially puts something out there, UFC 215 will be headlined by Demetrius Johnson and Ray Borg, which means no Demetrius Johnson, TJ Dillashaw. We already knew.
Yep.
But there is just a little bit. There was a, like a one millionth of 1%, like, part of me that was like, maybe something happened.
No, I didn't have the one millionth of a percent, but it was almost like a reminder of,
yeah,
oh yeah.
I guess that's what you're saying. That's
oh yeah, you know, with. Oh yeah, we were talking about some exciting stuff, and now it's this, you know.
Now it's this.
I mean, and that's really the only way to say it. Like, you and I have talked extensively on this topic, so I don't think we need to do so this evening.
No.
But it that is the feeling, though, right? I mean, even if you're one of those people who were like really supporting DJ and you thought that his points were valid and that he had taken the correct stance, et cetera, even if after all that, like, I just don't see how any fight fan could want to see this more than DJ versus,
well, they can't,
TJ Dillashaw.
And I also feel like, this is, and we already know this is going to happen, but it's the UFC saying, oh yeah, okay, you don't want to take that fight? Okay, here's what we're going to do. Go headline Edmonton. Have fun with that, because UFC 214 is going to be phenomenal. It's going to be amazing, and then we're going to go right into Conor and Floyd, and then here, have your little fight in Edmonton against Ray Borg you want to fight.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that is just how it worked out, though, as well. I mean, that's the time frames line up, you know, that's the next pay-per-view, blah, 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 but that is like kind of a sad byproduct of all this, is that initially it was supposed to happen in Seattle, which would have been cool for Demetrius, because
yeah,
he's from that area, obviously, so you miss out on that. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, have fun in Edmonton. It'll be great. Well, yeah, as we said, UFC 215 officially announced just in the last couple of hours. You got a kind of a heads up about what a lot of the fights were going to be. I think we knew Nunez Shevchenko was going to be run back there. That was at the night of the cancellation. It was pretty much kind of out there. But I guess I kind of just, you know, tweeted out the card earlier. Just, hey, just these five fights. This is the main card. If this is what stays, is this a good card? And I kind of feel like it is. Like, I kind of like how this is put together with Demetrius Ray Borg. Obviously, that's not a headliner that's going to blow people away. Nunez Shevchenko, I think, you know, you still have the anticipation of that fight not happening. You know, it's not going to blow anyone away either. But I think JDS and Francis Ngannou is a pretty exciting fight. I'm looking forward to Jeremy Stephens, Gilbert Melendez. I think that's a fun fight. Like, I kind of like this card.
Yeah, all the fights that you just named are fine. It's not going to sell well, which you know.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, there's almost always reasons to watch UFC cards. I mean, there almost always is. It's rare when you can look at a card and be like, there's literally nothing here that I'm interested in. You know, so it's one of those hardcore fight cards. You know, and it's happening to fall at a point in the calendar where that's fine, you know, because you weren't going to be getting casual attention on this anyway. So having it fall where it is, it almost like, how much do you think it really affects it? Because yes, it does to some certain degree, but it was already starting so low anyway, probably. And that's what's bad about this, because at the end of the day, Demetrius Johnson, what he is trying to do in this next fight is amazing. It is historical. Breaking Anderson Silva's record, I mean, you remember what it was like covering Anderson Silva in his prime. That was MMA. Anderson Silva's dominance was MMA.
It was almost the MMA version of like Tyson.
Yeah.
It was like, you not only do you knew he was going to win, you knew he was going to knock people out.
Yeah.
And it was like every fight you go in, like, when is he going to knock this guy out? Like,
he was going to put on a show, and it was going to be artistic almost, you know. And then there were some weird ones thrown in there occasionally, you know, the Damian Maia fight. But by and large, it was artistic, historical kind of moments, you felt like. This is one of those moments for Demetrius Johnson. But the whole TJ thing, man, and I'm not saying this because I'm like, oh, you know, rah-rah TJ. Like, I don't care, you know. If Demetrius Johnson had his reasons, that's fine. He got the fight he wanted. But I just am calling it what it is. When you look at this card, you look at the historical significance of what he's doing, your mind kind of drifts to this fight could have been TJ. Yeah. You know, and it's already kind of a letdown before it even starts.
So one thing that you said there, and I actually was going to move on from that and go to UFC 214, which I'm really excited to talk about. One thing that you said, though, was it was going to, because of where it falls in the calendar, it's kind of going to be lost in the shuffle anyway. Like, is that necessarily true, though? Or if you could put on a great card and take advantage of the hype that's going to be around McGregor leading into that, could you have used that as a springboard? Or is it just going to be like, yeah, there's not, you can't use this? Like, you could get on. I know they didn't promote at all. They didn't promote UFC really at all during the world tour.
No.
But, like, that week leading up to it, like, Dana White's going to be doing a million interviews on a million different outlets. Couldn't they have put something big coming out of that fight?
He didn't even do that, like you just said, at the tour. I mean, this is in 214 is actually a card that you would think he would want to promote. It was like lost. It was like forbidden to talk about almost. I didn't get any sense that the UFC 214 buzz went up because of anything that happened at the press tour.
Yeah.
Whatsoever.
And I just don't know if maybe, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you're right that they didn't. But maybe they changed the strategy, something. I don't know if they did have something. And I'm sure with this card that they won't. Especially because of how they feel about Demetrius Johnson right now. I'm sure they're not going to be like, you know, yeah, I know we got Conor and Floyd, but don't forget Demetrius Johnson, Ray Borg coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, Dana can be very petty. He can hold grudges. We know this. I don't think he would. I guess I just don't think he'll actively try to avoid questions about Demetrius Johnson. I don't think he'll care enough to do that. He's not going to completely go out of his way to sabotage his own event. He may do so indirectly just by saying things about Demetrius Johnson, like, all right, here you go, Demetrius Johnson, no one cares now. You know, he'll say that, but he's not going to necessarily be like, I'm not talking about Demetrius Johnson today. You know?
Well, or by the way, Amanda Nunes, who we also don't, that's interesting too, in that you've got Demetrius Johnson and Amanda Nunes defending their titles on the same card, and he has just come off trashing both of them.
For people like you and me and the rest of the people who pay really close attention, that does almost make the card more interesting.
It's awesome.
You have
two
champions that he's most upset at headlining and co-headlining
that's
that card.
Great. So that's UFC 215 coming up in September after the UFC 214 card and then the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather circus. Then you're going to have the two champions who are in the worst standing with UFC president Dana White coming up defending their titles at UFC 215. Well, as I mentioned, UFC 214 is the big event on the horizon. I've talked a little bit about it here and there, but I have, you know, certainly when I've discussed it with other people, have kind of been hesitant to bring up the fight, especially, you know, I think it's a great card top to bottom. Obviously, there's phenomenal fights all over the place. But to talk about Jones, Cormier, and get excited about a fight that you know something could go wrong right to the last minute. Like, how close are you now? Because I had this feeling with Ferguson and Nurmagomedov this year, and I refused to talk about it. I was like, something could happen. And then, you know, 2 days before the fight, I was like, you know what? We're here. I can start talking about it now. And then it fell apart because Nurmagomedov had weight cutting issues.
So sad.
The day before.
Yeah.
So I still feel responsible for jinxing that. I feel like we're getting close with Jones and Cormier. I think we're good.
I think we're good too. Yeah, didn't you bring this up last week or maybe even the week before?
That was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, you're very worried about this, that you're going to jinx something.
Because I know that fans have certainly been waiting for this a long time. We've been waiting to cover this, and I don't like I know the way the PR schedule is set up, and that's I'm sure that's something people don't really care about, but it's not really conducive to getting, you know, much deep discussion from those guys next week about where they, you know, how they feel and where they stand going into it. But I think everything about it, I think the press conference, I think the small amount of availability they're going to have on Thursday, I think, you know, the couple of individual interviews they're going to do off of that, I think there is going to be some insight. We've already seen a little bit from Jones. I still think he's saying a whole bunch of different things leading up to this, as he always has. But I thought he was interesting going into the last time they were scheduled to fight. I thought some of the things he said were interesting. Now, do you believe him? I don't know. But I think some of the things he said. So I'm fascinated by the whole thing. I'm fascinated by what each of them say, how they approach it, how they handle it, and, of course, the fight.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to get your take on this because I feel like I am against the grain on this one a little bit. But to me, it's so much about the comeback. And I don't know if that's really, like, the narrative that has been really being pushed. And I think a big, large part of that is because John won't really address it with anybody. I mean, he only addresses it with the people that he chooses to. So it's just not, that story is not out there. And, you know, the trailer, which was fantastic, that focused on it. And, of course, everyone is aware of it. And that's why I was saying that I'm interested in your thoughts, because is everyone just kind of sick of the comeback story? Is that not what this is all about? I look at this more as John Jones's comeback than I do a rivalry between those two. I see it as both, obviously. But if you're telling me which storyline is more compelling, I think it's John Jones all day. It's not John Jones versus Daniel Cormier.
Wow, I think it's close. I think it's much closer than you think it is. I think you're right.
Again, I'm not diminishing that the rivalry is great, but I'm just saying it's. Where your interest is, it's far more like, is can John get everything together? Can he still be that guy? Than it is, you know, it's more that story than it is a rivalry story for me.
Yeah, I agree, except for, you know, you said are people sick of it or they don't want to hear about the story? I know I have, and I'm sure you have, written the story about John Jones' comeback like 4 times.
Yeah,
like 4 times you've been like. He went through all this, but now,
yeah.
You know what? Life has turned around for him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, oh, wait, no, he's, okay. All right, well, now, he's coming back, so he's been through this, but yeah. Now life's turned around. Like, oh, no, wait.
You've also kind of wrote the same story about Daniel Cormier a bunch of times now, too, in that he hasn't quite been the top dog yet. You know, he always had the potential to do it. In wrestling, he did. He ran into Cale Sanderson when he was in college. The Olympics, you know, he had the weight-cutting fiasco. He wasn't able to compete. And then when he got his chance against John, came up short, and now he's here. He's at the top. That belt is his, but a lot of people are looking at it as, well, you're not the champion until you beat John Jones. So, but that story's been told now 4 or 5 times.
Right, but at the same time, like that story has been told, but it's not his doing that has stopped it.
Right.
So, like, and when you keep telling the story about John Jones and the fact that he's coming back again, and oh, he's got this stuff behind him, and then oh, he ruins it again, like. That is just the story being retold, and like it's like, okay, well, it's the same story. He did it to himself again. With Cormier, when you retell that story, like, he still is waiting to get that opportunity. It's not his doing that has created.
No, it's a great story, and John's is still a great story, but they're old stories now. And this is all kind of leading up to something I find pretty interesting, and that do you feel like the buzz is very low for this?
Yeah, because of Conor and Floyd.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's completely because of Conor and Floyd.
It's kind of a weird sort of imperfect storm coming together where it's like sometimes if a fight doesn't come together, it builds anticipation. I think in this case, it doesn't kill the anticipation for it, but it has not built it. It has lessened it because people have been like, yeah, you know what? We're supposed to see this. And it falls out. It falls out. It doesn't happen.
But I think that changes Wednesday. I mean, I think when everybody's in L.A., like because the fight's in Anaheim, but the media stuff's in L.A., I think once everybody's there, and then you know you see it on SportsCenter with you, and like it's back again, and it's here. I think there is that aspect of, yeah, we've known this fight is going to happen 7 to 8 times at this point. Like it never does. But when everybody's there, and it's like it's almost time to go, I think it ratchets up.
And you're probably right. However, I will say that I don't feel like even when it does, the buzz starts to build on Wednesday of next week, which you're right, it will. I don't think it will be as big as it could have been. And this kind of like speaks to, is the UFC too busy sometimes? You know, is Dana have too much going on? I mean, he's out there announcing Conor McGregor in four different places, just standing there on the stage, and then just getting up and saying Conor's name to the fans. That's really all he did. And
the Notorious.
And in the meantime, you know, why haven't we seen a like? This is the fight where you remember when they did like those primetime things where they didn't just do the Road to the Octagon ones, they did the primetime, they did bigger features, specials. Like, why didn't they do more with this fight? This seems to be the card to do it.
Is this what they discussed of being scared of Jon Jones headlining though? Of like, we're not going to invest all this in doing all that if we don't know if he's going to be there?
Yeah, but you know that's you can say that all day and that has some truth in it, but at the end of the day,
he's never going to headline another event.
Yeah. He could fall out of this card and still headline his next event.
I know. But Dana White did say he'll never headline another event, and now here we are. I think the other issue, besides all, because I think you're right, I think there's a lot that they could have done, and maybe they are too spread out, is that I don't think John has much interest in doing it.
No.
Like, John has done a couple interviews.
Yeah.
And I thought the one was really interesting. Was it a Bleacher Report, I think, that had a lengthy one with him?
Bleacher Report and Flow Combat, I believe.
Well, the Flow Combat one, it seemed like it was just a quick interview.
Yeah.
Like the Bleacher Report one was over like several days.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, was because I also think that you, I think having been around John, for a few years, I think the ones he's done a couple of interviews that were spread out over a couple of days or like at least a full day of like kind of hanging out, like going from place to place, like you with John, you need that because he is like, it's the narrative that's been going on forever of like the cameras come on, he's one person, he's trying to portray this character. Like, you need to be around him to really get like what the real story is with him sometimes. And it seemed to me, and I actually had the Flow Combat story called up because I wanted to quote something from it to transition into it because you mentioned the promo when he said, "I'm excited to move forward in my life. This victory is going to be a huge step in that direction. I'm really sick of seeing the narrative and the way promos have been done."
Yeah.
Like, he goes on to say more after that, but "I'm really sick of the narrative and the way promos have been done." John, you did this. Like, and there's still... I think we've also discussed the fact here that I don't know if there's a bigger John Jones defender in the MMA media than I am, but, like, John, you did it. Like, there is still a delusion factor there of, "I don't know why people keep this. I don't know why this is my story all the time." Like, yeah, because that is your story.
Yeah.
Like, the promo was amazing, and it told a lot of the, you know, a lot of the ups and downs and everything that he's been through, and was very honest about everything he has been as UFC champion, from the great to the complete low points. But like, to express any kind of frustration at that promo just shows that I don't think he thinks it's a fair narrative.
I think you're right, which is
it's crazy,
mind-boggling to think that.
And when you mentioned the fact of, you know, that is the bigger story, like the Jon Jones comeback narrative is the bigger story of this fight than the actual Jon Jones Daniel Cormier rivalry, which is huge, but the comeback narrative is bigger. Yeah, but if the guy who the narrative is about doesn't accept that and doesn't even believe that it should be a story, then it makes it difficult to tell that story and to portray that to people.
Yeah. That's when you got to have someone around to tell John, like, "Hey, man, like, I know you don't like talking about this, but this is good for you, actually. If you go down and talk about it, and that's good, you know, because we know what you're capable of when you get in and compete. This is actually a story that I know it's negative per se, but it's also very positive if you just talk about it and then don't do any of this stuff ever again, you know? I don't know. They say people don't change, right? And so I don't think Jon Jones has changed in the sense of, you know, he's got like that Michael Jordan meme face on his Twitter avatar.
Yeah.
Like he wants people to think like, "Oh, I'm done caring about what the media says," you know. And he did bring up his own cocaine use at the last press conference he was at, so that was surprising to me as well. But I think he's always going to care. And he's always a guy who's looking through social media. He's one of those guys where if you tweet to him, there's a good chance he's seeing it. You know, some people you tweet to, you're like, "Oh, I'm never going to see this." Jon Jones, he looks through all of those. You can tell.
And Conor, by the way.
And Connor.
Yeah, they both do. I think the social media narrative has been interesting as well. They have been tweeting back and forth and going after each other there. We'll get into that a little bit and get into this week's card, UFC on Fox. A very strong Long Island card here. A lot of representatives from the region will be fighting at home. One of them is Jean Valente, and we talked to him yesterday. We'll hear that in just a couple of minutes as well. MMA Insiders on a Thursday.
MMA Insider Show.
MMA Insiders, Thursday. Adam Hill, Las Vegas Review Journal. Brett Okamoto from ESPN here talking about what's going on in the world of MMA. UFC 214 next week down in Anaheim. We'll have all kinds of coverage at both of our respective outlets. I'm sure you'll see Brett on television. Got all the ties ready and everything.
Yeah, I should shave now so that the 5 o'clock is coming in like at the appropriate length right when the weekend hits.
Well, that's like 9 days out.
Yeah, I like to have a little length to it.
In 9 days, I would have like a full beard.
No, my facial hair grows extremely slowly and patchy.
So jealous of that. Very, very lucky. So check that out. See if Brett has the 5 o'clock shadow going next week down in Anaheim. We're talking about Cormier and Jones, obviously the big fight on the card. Well, first of all, we talked about maybe like a lack of buzz, a lack of interest. I'll tell you one thing. It hasn't affected ticket sales or resale sales because the prices are astronomical for this fight.
Mm.
And they sold out quickly, and now if you try to get a ticket online through any of the, you know, the resale sites, good luck. So I guess we could say you don't feel it, and I think when, you know, when we're talking about what the buzz around it was, I think you don't feel it in general. I absolutely do. Like, there's certain fights where, like, I'm just like, oh, this fight's coming up. And I, like, earlier this year was Nurmagomedov Ferguson. That was like, I'd been waiting for months. Mm-hmm. Didn't get to see it. Like, this fight, I'm like, okay, this is why I love the job that I have.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of cards you go through, you're like, okay, another week of fights.
No.
This is, like, I am extraordinarily excited for next week.
Yeah, there's no question about that. When we're talking about buzz, I always, I think, at least my understanding of it, and you and I should probably get on the same page since we do a radio show together, that when we use the term buzz, I'm talking about, like, are people excited about this? Is that going to reflect on the pay-per-view
numbers? Oh, I know. And I wasn't disagreeing. I feel the same thing. Like, when you talk about buzz, I think you talk about, as you said, like, what is it going to do numbers-wise and that sort of thing. But also, like, when you're walking around, like, are people asking you about it? Are people talking about this? Like, are you just feeling the excitement building for it?
Yeah, and I'm not, because all anyone's asking me about is Mayweather McGregor, which is to be expected. It doesn't surprise me that ticket sales are still strong. It's a good market. It's a great card. It's a card you want to be at in terms of, I'm sure the pay-per-view number will be the best number of the year so far, which is not saying much for the UFC,
yeah,
because they've had a down year. But it will be good. I'm just wondering if, relatively speaking, of what we think a John Jones coming back, his return to glory, you know, against his bitter rival, will it do those types of numbers? I don't think it will, because I'm not feeling that buzz that you usually feel before seeing those big numbers.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I was just getting at the fact that I do, and I feel the same thing that you do. Like, around me, I don't feel it, but internally, I'm like, yeah, this is going to be amazing, and the rest of the card is great, too. The last thing I wanted to get to on this is that John Jones, you mentioned how he likes to check Twitter and keep up on social media comments. That's always been the case. He loves like commenting on random fan posts.
Yeah,
he is all over Cormier's Instagram right now.
Yeah,
like every time Cormier posts a picture, like Jones is just going all in, mocking him and taking shots at him.
You think he's got the alerts on? Like anytime Daniel does something, John's phone lights up.
No, but I think he's got that. That like new when you, I'm not trying not to reveal too much about my Instagram habits. I think he, like, when he logs on, like, he doesn't just scroll through. He just goes right. He just like search Cormier, posted recently.
Yeah,
I don't think he's just randomly scrolling and like, oh, here's a Cormier. Like, I think he's going to his actual page.
Yeah,
to find out, and then he's just going all in. He also had his crew kind of reenact the towel scene from Buffalo,
which was very strong.
Where it was great. I thought it was awesome. But I have seen both takes on this that, A, you know, he's distracted or, you know, for whatever reason, he's not focusing on the fight because he's just focusing on trolling on Instagram and all this other stuff, and he should focus on the training. And that, to me, is stupid.
That is so stupid.
To me, this is vintage John Jones. Like, this is Jones being back to being John Jones.
Yeah, being a little kid on social media where he tweets something and then he deletes it immediately and probably giggles, you know, from his from his house while he's doing it. To say that the guy, hey, you don't know. You don't know if he's training hard or not. You don't know if he's changed his habits. That's sort of what almost makes him, that's part of the sell with John Jones now, you know, is to find out the answers to those questions. But to say that the guy's not training hard, he's distracted because he sends tweets throughout the day?
Or overconfident. I mean, there's all kinds of things about that argument. I think it's completely crazy. But exciting week coming up next week. Two other title fights on the card as well. Maya and Woodley, I think, is a pretty intriguing clash of styles, although I think it's actually a really good matchup for Woodley.
I do too.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard people say, like, oh, you know, Maya is so good on the ground, he can do this, but, you know, Woodley is a really good wrestler, and Maya's takedowns probably aren't going to be too effective against him, and if Woodley can stand with him, he's probably going to knock him out.
Maya gets his guy down, but usually anytime it's after the first round, it looks like it's a very difficult struggle for him to do it. Like, he's just getting it by the skin of his teeth, you know? And that's not gonna work against. You're not going to be tired and awkwardly pawing a jab and then dive into Woodley's legs, and all of a sudden he's going to be on his back. Like, Maya is so good and so crafty at that kind of stuff that you never say never, but it seems very unlikely to me.
Cyborg and Evinger, just a blowout. Evinger's tough. She's gritty. I just don't know if she can hang.
I don't see where her path to victory is. I see plenty of you know, being tough and durable and gritty. I don't know where I see her having a lot of success, though.
Lawler, Cerrone, we were supposed to see this earlier this month. I think this is just a fun fan fight.
Yeah.
Pretty excited for that one, too.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that will be a good one. And so card top to bottom looks pretty entertaining. Certainly we'll be down there, as I said, and full coverage and picks and all that stuff. Check out next week throughout our Twitter and our pages and everywhere. We usually follow our stuff. But this week, UFC on Fox, Weidman and Gastelum. I want to get into some of the fights and break down some of the betting angles and the preview of some of the fights on the card. But we did get a chance to catch up with somebody that is on the card, somebody who actually is very close to main eventer Chris Weidman, one of his closest friends, Jean Valente. Valente has alternated wins and losses for a while, but he is looking to get back on the right track. And I know that he's excited to fight at home, and so that's what I asked him about.
Valente joins us, got a big fight coming up on his home turf this week. I guess just first of all, let's just start there. You're fighting in Long Island. What does this mean to you?
It's great, man. It's a long time coming, something I wish I could have started out my career doing, but it's cool, man. I'm excited. All my friends are excited, family's excited, but, you know, for me, it's really just go in there, get the win. Then after, I enjoy being in Long Island.
Yeah, you guys have kind of had that Long Island scene going for a while, but what is the scene like there in the MMA world now with, you know, legalized in New York, you've got cards there and everything. I guess, what does the entire MMA scene look like?
I mean, it's been big here for a while. I don't know why. You think Long Island, you don't necessarily think of, like, man, they're going to make some good fighters out of there, but we got great wrestling and we got some great fighters. And it's, you know, I'm not the only one. We got a lot of them. We got, you know, five or six of them on the card. There's like 9 or 10 of them overall. And it all started with, Matt Serra and Phil Baroni. So the old timers, and, you know, just follow their lead, get in the UFC and do well. And we've kind of made a little breeding ground for good MMA fighters out here.
There you go. You talked about a bunch of them on the card. Obviously, Chris on the top of it. Bermudez is fighting, and you've got Pat Cummins. And this is a fight that was supposed to take place last year. It didn't happen. How much had you prepared for him already before this fight camp?
Talked about it before. I'm not a big game plan guy or change much for any opponent I'm going to fight. I go in there with the same game plan every time, and, you know, outstrike the other guy and stop the wrestling, and that's, you know, usually the plan. And yeah, I did a little bit more wrestling for Pat this time around, because I know, you know, how much he likes to wrestle and what kind of a prolific wrestler he is. So do a little bit more wrestling than I usually do, but mostly everything the same. Go in there and, you know, I have natural ability to stop wrestling pretty well, and then go in there and strike. So hopefully it works out.
That's the voice of Jean Vellante getting ready to fight at home. Nassau Coliseum coming up this Saturday on Fox against Pat Cummins. You mentioned how, you know, you just wanted to go in there and get the win and then kind of enjoy the rest of it, but it's been the last couple of fights. It's been alternating wins and losses. You just haven't been able to get that win streak together. I guess how frustrating is that for you to not be able to find that, you know, consistency in getting victories?
Yeah, you know, I still think, you know, being 31, I'm not exactly a young fighter anymore. I'm still, you know, still in the middle somewhere, I guess, right now. Yeah. But I kind of, you know, I'm still learning every time I'm in there. I've got a lot of fights, but I still learn a lot every time I'm in there, and I'm finding out new ways to win every time I'm in there, and new ways to lose. So it's just a matter of, you know, learning from your experiences and doing better. I feel healthy. As long as I'm healthy, you know, I'll keep doing it and hopefully get more wins with my belt.
And obviously with, you know, with, as you mentioned, the other local guys, but Chris being, you know, a guy that we know, we associate with you a lot, and he's on the top of the card, and he's getting ready at the same time, kind of peaking your training camps together. Is that helpful to you as you get ready for a fight?
Yeah, it's cool peaking at the same time. No matter what, we're in each other's training camp anyway, helping each other with any way we can. So not that much different that he needs to train the same time I do, because we're always doing stuff together. So, you know, we were all each other had for a while, and not a lot of big guys, MMA-wise, from Long Island. So just us two going at it a lot of times. So it's cool, but we'll both peak at the same time, and it was we had a lot of fun together, go through the same stuff together. Yeah. And he could take some of the pressure off me, you know?
You know, I mean, speaking of doing stuff together, you know, I saw the, you know, the clips of you guys as, you know, dressing up as wrestlers for, you know, for the birthday party. I feel like you committed a little more to Hulk Hogan than he did to the Ultimate Warrior.
I mean, he went in with full intention. He didn't know how hard I was going until I showed up at his house. But he had full intention of going as hard as he can. He was studying film, doing the gorilla press. He was really thinking, you know, but I have a lifelong love for Hulk Hogan. So I just, you know, I showed my heart out there and really put it on as Hulk Hogan. So, you know, I have a little bit more more experience when it comes to that stuff.
That's true. It does seem like you're a guy that likes to have fun. Obviously, we've seen that in some of the behind the scenes videos. We've seen it, you know, anytime you're interviewed, we get to see, you know, kind of a different side of you. But I am most fascinated by reality show expert Jean Vellante than anything else. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but you're kind of in that world now. I mean, what is the bartending gigs like been on this Bravo show?
I don't know if I'm in that world. I'd love to be, but no, it's cool, man, getting to hang out with those people. Andy Cohen's a great dude, man. He loves MMA and actually trains a little bit himself.
Really?
He trained at Mike Medrano, a guy I know from Jersey, who Lil Flair, who's on this card, actually. So he trained with him. It was pretty funny to hear him say that to me. And, yeah, he's a good dude, takes care of me. He doesn't know much about the MMA stuff, but I know enough about the reality world stuff that we could kind of exchange a good conversation.
what should we be watching now? Is there anything on the horizon, or is there anything new that we need to check out in the reality realm?
Oh, I'm a big fan of the Below Deck that's on right now on Bravo. It's a great one.
Okay.
About all these bougie people who yacht, you know, all around the Mediterranean.
All right.
And they're super bougie. It's kind of fun to watch. I also like Teen Mom too. I'm a big fan of that one.
All right.
Teen Mom makes me laugh. I'll give you those as my top two right now. I love Hip Hop Atlanta just ended, but I was a fan of that one too. They got some some craziness on that.
that is out there. And I mean, I know that, you know, I'm a Vanderpump Rules guy. I know that that is, you know, one of the shows you watch. It's not too long till it comes back too. I'm looking forward to it. But is it, am I wrong that I don't think I like anyone on the show, but I love the show.
Oh, absolutely. I like Lisa. That's about it. Everyone else I absolutely hate. So it's kind of tough to do lots of fun this morning. And, like, there were seasons where I liked certain people, and then I'm like, man, why did I ever like that person? They suck.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's tough. I definitely hate it. Well, Lisa's my girl, though. Lisa, you know.
Yeah, she's old school.
She's
for sure.
One of my favorite. She's awesome on Vanderbilt.
That is John Vellante here with us. Got the fight coming up on Saturday against Patrick Cummins. Last thing on this reality thing, and then I'll let you out of here. We will see you on a show one day, right? There will be either a John Vellante reality show, or there will be an appearance somewhere on a show.
Oh, man, I've been talking about it. We got WME now, and I'm trying to tell them, man, I need a dating show with my mother. My mother would be the best judge ever. So, I'm a single guy. I think it would be funny, you know. Got that whole Italian thing working. So, I think it would be really funny to have my mother out there as a judge and she gets to take it. So, we've been talking about it. I got some ideas out there. I don't want to break too much news on your show right now. But
all right.
It's an inside peek at what's coming, man. We're gonna get this dating show on. Hopefully, like a VH1, so it could be really raunchy.
There you go. Well, we will be on the lookout for that. But first, we'll watch the fight on Saturday. Good luck against Pat Cummins, and we'll check out you and all the rest of the Long Island guys on that card Saturday night on Fox. Thanks, man.
You got it, bro.
MMA Insider Show.
Right back here, closing things out. MMA Insiders, Adam Hill, Las Vegas Review Journal, Brett Okamoto from ESPN. Wanted to get into some of the fights on the card, as you just heard from John Vellante there, who will fight Patrick Cummins. We'll get into the betting line of that and some of the other fights on the card. But we were talking about Jones Cormier, so I wanted to get the latest update on that line. It looks like anywhere from minus 255 to minus 270 right now for John Jones. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it the first time?
It was actually around the same number.
That's what I thought.
It ticked up momentarily, like above $3, but it was about that same price.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I know we talked about this before. You just don't think things have changed, even though Jones hasn't been fighting. Cormier has been, you know, I know you didn't like when I talked about the added confidence because he has been winning, but hasn't been against Jones. Do you think the age plays more of a, like, Cormier is older now?
Yeah.
So no, that balances out the other things.
I mean, the other week, I don't think that like when you bring up his confidence level, DC's, that's a real thing, you know. And I thought that if anything, he would be more confident just because he's already been in there with Jones. He's felt him, you know. He knows more exactly what he's getting into this time. So it would help from a confidence level from that standpoint. But I just don't think that outweighs the fact that we are 2 years more down the road. He's had injuries during that time. You know, I mean, the guy has had some knee issues in the past. So I just feel like the more time that goes by, the more it's going to favor John Jones.
There is the thing that's been brought up from Cormier's side a couple of times that is kind of a, you know, it's an underlying factor in the fight to some people, that it is a post-USADA John Jones now. I mean, is that even something to consider when you break down the fight?
No, honestly, no. I mean, I've talked to DC, as I'm sure you have, and gotten his thoughts as to why he thinks that, and he brings up valid arguments. I mean, he articulates his stance pretty well. You know, does that mean that that I'm jumping on that and saying, oh yeah, he's going to come back and not be the same fighter? It's a piece. They're all pieces, right? There's all pieces that fit into these things. It's something to keep in mind, but I don't think that's, you know, any kind of narrative that we're focusing on here.
There we go. UFC on Fox 25 on Saturday, as we mentioned, a network TV card. Long Island, first time for the UFC to go there. And a ton of fighters are from Long Island, and almost all of them are on the card, getting a chance to fight at home after a long time where you couldn't fight in New York at all. Chris Weidman, Kelvin Gastelum at the top of the card. I find this fight very intriguing for a lot of reasons. Obviously, the biggest one is that Chris Weidman looked undefeated. He was undefeated, looked phenomenal for a long time, lost the title, and then lost twice in a row again. Now, there was, you know, circumstances around the last fight against Musasi. It was obviously controversial at the end. And against Romero, he looked like he may have a good chance to win and then caught the big flying knee in that fight. So there's been circumstances around the losses, but he has lost three fights in a row after never losing in his career. The line I thought was surprising. Gastelum's up to minus 190 now. So a pretty sizable favorite. And I understand Gastelum is young. He's got incredible skills. And, you know, people have kind of fallen in love with him over some of these wins. But, man, I think there's a lot of value with Chris Weidman here as a former champion fighting at home.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where I do think that there is a lot of value on Weidman. But I probably still wouldn't take it because I like Gastelum in the fight.
Really?
I do. And it's not that I love him. I mean, I'm certainly not betting him at minus 190. But the weird thing about Weidman has been, in my opinion, the cardio. I mean, he was completely gassed after one round against Gegard Mousasi. And both guys knew it. I mean, I rewatched that fight today, and the camps were talking about it, both of them. Mousasi's camp was telling him he was already tired. And Ray Longo in Weidman's corner was yelling, trust the cardio, trust the cardio. And it just was not there for him at all. I mean, his whole, what he does is, and what he could do against Kelvin Gastelum is push a pace, force him to grapple, you know, get him on the ground, take away some of the pace that he likes to set. But I just don't know. In a 5-round fight, he better submit him early. Because unless he submits him early in the fight, I think stylistically it's very much in Gastelum's favor.
Do we trust Gastelum's cardio at this point? I mean, he's improved on it.
No, I don't trust his cardio, but it's easier to... I would rather be the tired... if you're going to be tired, I would rather be the striker and not the grappler. You know, because if Chris gets tired, he can't take him down. You know, Kelvin gets tired. Yeah, he might lose a little bit on his punches, and he might not be able to keep up the pace that he wants, but he's still the better striker, in my opinion.
The one thing... Like, I think Gastelum has a very bright future, and I think down the road he'll be a pretty elite fighter. He's already, you know, kind of on that level, at least getting to that level. And I know Steve Cofield here on the show has talked about him for a long time and loved his upside. The one thing I think people have gotten a little bit carried away with some of the recent wins when you look back and you're like, wow, he's looked great.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, he knocked out Tim Kennedy, who can't strike. Vitor Belfort is so far past his prime and, you know, not using anymore. Johnny Hendricks at UFC 200.
I mean, you can make a case that all three of his last opponents should be retired right now.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. While I look at it and say, this has been a great run and he has started to show those elite skills that we thought he might have, I think there needs to be a little bit of a caution and say, all right, let's see. This is his chance.
He put them away in impressive fashion, though. And yeah, like it's important to keep that in mind, the caliber of opponents that he's faced. But he's done, you know, everything that you would have expected him to do against those guys. So I think that's why. But yeah, people are getting a little too over aggressive, I think, betting him up to 190. I mean, Chris Weidman is still very, very good.
What? I mean, I know we. We'll have time after, and it's tough to talk about hypotheticals, but what happens to Weidman with a loss? That'd be four in a row.
Yeah. He sticks around. I mean, we can talk about this if it happens, but everyone's describing this as like a do or die, and I think that phrase gets sort of overplayed. I mean, what is really do or die? He's not going to get cut, you know? I mean, they're still, because of how much money he makes, they're going to keep putting him up against really great guys, and he's important to that market, New York. You know, I mean, he's not going anywhere. It's just if he drops another one, especially by knockout, these losses just haven't been losses. They've been knockout losses. Three knockout losses in a row. If he takes a fourth one, then we're actually moving him out of that, you know, title contender status, and he's just kind of in the middle of the pack at that point.
His friend, his good buddy, Jean Valente, who we've seen them as friends and trading partners and as close buddies for a long time. We just talked to Valente here a few minutes ago. Valente goes up against Patrick Cummins. Valente actually a minus 180 favorite in this. They were briefly linked to a fight last year that kind of fell apart, and now they're matched up again. Valente is win loss over the last eight, has not been able to put together that consistency in his game. Can he finally start to put something together, because to me, that's just who he is. He's going to put on fun fights. He's athletic. He's just never going to be that guy that can make a big run and have a long winning streak.
Yeah, no, he's not. He just doesn't have that elite skill set. The problem with Patrick Cummins is that he has sort of an elite skill set when you're talking about his wrestling pedigree and some of the things he's able to do, but he is slowing down. I mean, athletically, I just don't think he can match a lot of these guys he's going against, and he also can't take a punch. It's very hard to be competing in mixed martial arts if you can't take a punch, and Cummins does not take one well.
Oh, is that a requirement?
Not a requirement, but it's preferred.
It's like on the resume, you got to put that, like, can take a punch in order to get signed.
That's what you always hear from guys. Yeah, like, first thing you do with a great wrestler, oh, he wants to fight? Let's find out if he can take a punch. Yeah. We'll know right away.
Darren Elkins, Dennis Bermudez. Dennis Bermudez, another Long Island guy on this card, and he's laying 200 at home against The Damage, who, I don't know. You look at him, you're like, I don't know, but he, like, you can't stop him. He just keeps coming. You can knock him around for like 12 minutes, and all of a sudden he's still coming at you.
Yeah, so then I think you look at the guy he's fighting and how mentally strong that guy is, because that's what'll mess with you and potentially get you a loss against Darren Elkins, is if you've beat him from one end of the cage to the other, but he's still around, and then all of a sudden you're tired and you're like, what, this guy is I can't get him out of here. You know, we've seen that in some of Elkins' fights. I think Bermudez is enough of a veteran that we won't see that out of him, though.
Won't get frustrated. He's fighting at home. We want to put on a good performance for sure. Well, bunch of other fights on the card. You can check out those numbers and have some more analysis in the RJ if you want to check that out. And a preview coming on Saturday. Great stuff. Real quick, what are your thoughts so far on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series?
I liked it, man. The food truck in there, the family and friends, everyone just kind of milling about. Snoop is in his trailer, and there's certain aromas coming out of that thing. Yeah. It's kind of a unique, fun setting. I like it.
It's definitely cool. You can check that out on Fight Pass and go back and watch the Sean O'Malley fight. That was pretty incredible. Snoop certainly going nuts about him. And then, for some reason, he goes and smokes something with him afterwards. We'll see if there's any repercussions to that. I don't know what's going on. But that'll do it. MMA Insiders, Adam Hill, Brett Okamoto. Follow him at BOkamoto, ESPN, at Adam Hill, LVRJ for me. We'll talk to you soon.
MMA Insider Show.